Hello, listeners. This is Lee Price.
This is Will Ford from Football 365.
And you're listening, smartly, to At the Bridge Pod, a Chelsea FC podcast, although I would describe it as the Chelsea FC podcast.
Magical from Eden Hazard! Kai Havertz in the Champions League final! Ivanovic!
Getting in the middle, it's just behind him. Intercepted by Hakimi. It's
Matic with the ball driver!
It's time for another episode of At the Bridge Pod, your number one Chelsea FC podcast. Coming up on this episode,
another week, another Chelsea controversy. Oh, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of At the Bridge Pod. I am joined in a virtual room filled with some lions. I've got Chris and Berfy's on the pod. Berfy's back on the pod. Berfy's back.
I'm back.
That is the highlight of my week. Well, it's the highlight of my Monday.
That's really nice.
It's awesome to have you back on. Finally, I'm really, really content. I'm really content, happy. Content's too calm. But what I'm not calm about is highlights, moments of the weekend. I'm going to change to moments. That was what the tweet said. Moments of the weekend. What we got?
Well, you know, like me and Chris and you were talking off air. I played my first game of football in ages yesterday. I played at centre back, which is a position I don't normally play. And I think I've broken my toe. I don't know if it's a highlight.
I wouldn't celebrate that. Yes.
No, but like I feel like nothing else has happened. I feel like that's the only moment that really happened of this weekend. So I think I'll go with that. I'll say that anyway.
Chris, what about yourself? Chris is thinking currently. Or he's muted himself or disappeared. Yeah, I can hear you now. I mean,
you can hear me now, yeah.
We're leaving that in. Chris, what was your moment of the weekend? Highlight moment? What was it?
I mentioned that my daughter was playing again on Saturday. She started for the first time for a new team. Came off at half time with the score at 1-1. Came back on with like 10 minutes left and played a part in the two goals that won them the game 3-1.
No, is that allowed? Can you be subbed on, back on?
Yeah, roll on.
Oh, right, okay. Well, fair enough. My highlight has got to be Tyler Adams striking a ball harder than Mjolnir into the net.
Adams.
Oh, what was that?
He goes for...
Absolutely
good.
Honestly.
It was a good goal. It was a good goal.
Damn! Shout out to the Ryan King for showing that off in the Discord, because I might have missed that. But what a goal!
I'll tell you what wasn't a highlight of the weekend was Brazil versus England, which was probably the worst game I've ever seen in my lifetime.
I don't know. I watched Denmark 0, Switzerland 0. That was very boring.
I doubt that would have been much better. England was much better. I'll be honest.
Oh, it was like Kasper Schmeichel's making his 100th appearance. That was about it. Nothing else happened. It was just so...
That's a milestone. I don't know what milestones there were in the England-Brazil game, but...
It was just so... It was if ever a game you could consider to be bland, it was like that. There was no flavour to it at all. Yeah, just that was it. Oh, dear. Right. Usually, I was going to go straight to a game review, but before we do that, there was a little bit of news that broke about 10, 15 minutes ago. So if you've been on Twitter, X, whatever, you might have seen it. I hope you too may have. Former CEO of Chelsea, Marina Granovskaya, is apparently under scrutiny regarding her involvement in secret payments made under Abramovich's ownership. There are leaked documents suggesting that she was aware of some transactions, including payments to agents of players. Questions have arose about her personal benefit from these payments and whether they should have been disclosed by the club. The Premier League's investigating whether Abramovich used offshore companies to subsidise Chelsea's expenses. This would obviously breach financial rules. Granovskaya's ties to Abramovich and her role in overseeing Chelsea affairs have raised concerns about oversight by the clubs. But that was we already knew about that. There's also potential of personal loans, payments for advisory services. There's a lot of questions there. Obviously, these leaked documents apparently reveal payments to agents and advisors connected to the club. So there's going to be even more scrutiny under us. If found guilty, if this is the big word before everyone loses their shit on Twitter, if found guilty, yes, we could be open to point deductions. I don't know about demotion. That's very extreme. Oh, another controversy. Doesn't go away, does it?
Yeah, the thing is, with these things, it's always doom and gloom, because let's face it, bad news is always the most popular news. Until it actually happens, until something's official, until something's sort of like set in stone, there's no point worrying about it. There's no point sort of, you know what I mean? It's just one of them that sort of sounds bad. Obviously, it could be very bad for us, but at the end of the day, until it happens, then there's no point trying to like speculate and worry about what's going to happen to us, really.
Mm. I mean, Chris, are you looking forward to playing Harrogate Town next season in League Two?
That'd be lovely. Some new away games. Do you know my feelings on all of this? And this goes the same for Man City, Everton, Forest, pretty much every club now that's going to get done by these rules. These clubs are breaking a rule that I just don't think should be in place in the first place. I don't think financial fair play has been a good thing for the Premier League at all. Mm-hmm. In football in general, really. I understand what it was there for. It was to stop clubs from going out of business. But all you've actually done is just hinder club successes. And that's why I think it's gone so boring now with the same clubs at the top for so long, because you can't catch up to these clubs now. You know, Leicester are on about getting promoted and having a points deduction.
Yeah,
well, they're going to go back down then. So it's pointless. So, you know, all these clubs are going to get done, and I know there'll be a lot of criticism, but they're breaking rules that shouldn't, in my opinion, shouldn't be there. So I actually haven't got a problem with it. Obviously, you know, it's not a good thing to get points deductions and all that, but eventually they're going to change these rules anyway. So
that was a fact. They've said that they're not fit for purpose, so they're going to be changing them. So it's annoying, isn't it? Yeah.
How are you punishing clubs, but based on a system that you already know is flawed?
Yeah,
it makes no sense.
No, very Premier League, very, yeah. I mean, it's, you just got to sort. It's going to be, I think it'll just keep going through the courts. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, it will take years to sort out anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how it all plays out. Chelsea women headed out on the road to take on West Ham in the WSL. Here is the match report. West Ham threatened an early shock, but they missed that crucial chance, and it allowed Chelsea to take the lead within minutes. Beaver Jones capitalised on a swift build-up to score an absolute clinical opening goal. It was like total football. It was pure artistry. It really was. Despite the intense start, West Ham squandered many opportunities, with Kirsty Smith missing a golden chance. Beaver Jones showcased her pace and had a shot denied by the West Ham keeper. West Ham had a controversial goal disallowed for offside, which replay showed was onside. However, the game remained 1-0, and there were chances for both teams before the half. West Ham did nearly score from long range, while Asai missed a clear opportunity. After the half time, Chelsea made some tactical adjustments, but both teams struggled really to find the target. Ramirez came close to doubling our lead, hit the posts, but we managed to get the second goal, with Cuthbert sealing it with an absolute outstanding shot from a corner. Despite West Ham's efforts, I mean, we maintained dominance. At the end of the day, we secured the victory, 3 points on the board in the race for that WSL title. West Ham 0, Chelsea 2. It wouldn't be a Chelsea game or Chelsea week without a controversial officiating decision. Chris, how do you feel about the result, though?
Massive result. Given the period that we're in with so many games in such a short space of time, there was going to be a game where we didn't play very well, and this was it.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
to get the result was massive. It's like, these are the sort of games you look back on if you win the league and think, that was massive, that game. It had that sort of feel about it, because we didn't play well at all for large parts of the game. Like, we played okay in spells, but for large parts of the game, you could just see that all of the matches we've been playing have caught up with us. But that's what winners do. they find a way to get results, and that's exactly what we did. I have got to say though, and I know it went in our favour, but I also watched the Manchester derby where obviously we wanted Man City to drop points. The fact that the WSL doesn't have VAR is an absolute joke.
It's not a good look, is it? I mean, West Ham
the West Ham goal is miles onside.
Yes.
And the first Man City goal is miles offside. So it's the fact that that hasn't been introduced yet is just I don't understand why.
Yeah.
It must be something to do with the grounds that they normally play at. Is the only thing I can think of as to why it hasn't been introduced.
That's possible.
But when they're playing, this weekend, where it was sort of, you know, women's football weekend, and every single club except for West Ham was playing at the main stadium, why couldn't they have VAR this weekend? It made no sense. It's got to be something that's introduced from next season, because it just makes a mockery of it when you have, you know, Man City scoring a goal that was miles offside, West Ham scoring a goal that was miles onside that was ruled out. It's a farce, isn't it?
I mean, in positives, I mean, the opening goal was one fine assist and finish. And I'll give flowers to the absolute beautiful through ball from Nushkin. That was total football for me. Cuthbert's strike was outstanding to make it two. But yeah, I kind of felt the same. Overall, I felt we missed a lot of chances. 2-0 on paper, it doesn't tell the truth, because we were fortunate to win, you know, especially when West Ham obviously should have had their goal stand. We all know 1-1, that's a totally different game. And this, as much as people go, look, the Hammers are second from bottom, they beat Arsenal 2-1 only last month.
It was never going to be easy. They're better than their league position suggests that they are.
I mean, 3 points all that matters. We're on to the second leg against Ajax this Wednesday. And on that topic, you said about March. 3rd of March was obviously we kicked off this huge amount of fixtures. We beat Leicester 4-0. Then we beat City in the League Cup 1-0. Beat Everton in the FA Cup 1-0. Beat Arsenal 3-1. Beat Ajax 3-0. Just beat West Ham 2-0. There's only Ajax and the Arsenal game to come. Hey, 100% record, I'm not complaining. I'm still worried that if we lost 1-0 against Ajax on Wednesday, you wouldn't be like, as long as we get through, that's kind of the thing. And hey, Barcelona didn't look too perfect in their first leg.
I think going into that game as well, I wouldn't be surprised if she did rest people, because
it's got to be done.
We have got a commanding lead. I mean, Ajax are a decent side, but it would be a massive shock if they overturned a 3-0 deficit from the first leg.
Well, let's hope we don't proceed. Unfortunate events say that. I mean, Berth, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall it was a good win in the weekend. I don't think it was our 100% best, but, you know, like Chris said, it's what winners do. And we are very much, the women's team are everything the men's team aren't. And that's, we just seem to grind out a win, whether we're bad or good. And you always have faith they're going to do that.
Yeah. A machine, true machine.
Yeah. That's a great way of describing it. And if, like I said, those wins where you just sort of scrape them are almost better for momentum than ones where you win 4 or 5-0, because it just gives you that confidence boost. You're not played well, but you've won. So it gives you that edge, gives you that sort of winner's mentality. And I think going forward, that really just will give us that edge in the running in the Champions League as well. So I mean, the guys just keep going and hopefully play better than they did. But it was a good win nonetheless.
Yeah. We put up a poll on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter, and 66.7% of you said you just wanted us to discuss Amari Hutchinson and his future at the Blues. So, yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to have a quick chat about it. I mean, many few things capture the imagination, quite like a top talent in football nowadays on the rise. And obviously, 20-year-old, he's a forward. He's currently having a huge impact on loan at Ipswich Town. He fits that bill, doesn't he? You know, up and coming. And he is actually a Cobham graduate, but before he obviously ended up at Arsenal and then came back. And with this success, there's some difficult decisions on the horizon for him. You know, he's both club and international level. His impressive performances at Ipswich, they've not gone unnoticed by other clubs. And both two international teams are after him. 8 goals, 6 assists from 42 appearances. He's caught the eye of many a club. All won him. And I'll open it up here. First of all, do you actually think he should stay and compete for a spot, or do you think he should just go on loan?
I think he needs another loan, to be honest with you. But a Premier League loan.
Well, we've all seen how those come out for Broyer.
But I feel that, if I'm... Okay, so if Ipswich go up, I think he should stay with Ipswich for a season.
Yes, agreed.
But if they don't, then I definitely think he needs maybe to an Everton or somewhere like that. I think the kid is very talented. And I think he reminds me of Hudson-Odoi. And I think where we went wrong with Hudson-Odoi is that we didn't re-loan him out much. I think if he gets the sort of the Premier League experience, the playing week in, week out in the Premier League, then I think he stands a chance the season after. But for me, I think he's got a Premier League loan next season.
Okay. Chris, what do you think before we have a little chat? Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. It makes perfect sense. I mean, obviously, apparently the club are very pleased with his progress there. I mean, they should be. I mean, he's doing incredibly well in a team that's currently third. We are apparently going to be considering offering him a new deal. But I think the thing is, you got to look at our squad and you sort of see the serious competition in his preferred position. You know, forget the club side of this. I mean, it'll sort of come down to the decision of will he be content with a bit part role or seeking an opportunity elsewhere, loan, permanent, whichever. I mean, he's got 1 year left on his current deal. He said his primary ambition is to stay and win trophies with Chelsea, and he feels he's good enough to do it. I mean, looking at some of our performances recently, you can't blame him for that attitude. I'd have the exact same, you know. I mean, researching this, I read that in the second half of last season, he was often doing training drills with João Felix and they would combine really well. And apparently leaving opponents chasing their shadows. I mean, interesting. João Felix is obviously not with us, but look, what's Hutchinson's positions? Well, he's a right-sided player. He's an Ura number 10. I mean, and then you look at ours and who do we boast in those two positions based on who have played in that role this year? Cole Palmer, Sterling, Mudrick, Madueke, Carney, and Gallagher. I mean, he has played in that 10 role, I think, once or twice. I mean, he's probably gone, let's be honest. But what factors do you think should Hutchinson consider when deciding his next move, Chris?
I mean, he's got to look at the competition ahead of him and think, can he realistically get enough game time to develop? I think it would be too early for him. I think people do tend to get a little bit carried away when someone has a good spell. And we have got to remember that this is still the Championship where he's performing. And the step up from there to the expectation of Chelsea is huge.
Mm.
You know, you look at his numbers this year, they are really good.
Yeah.
But if he had similar numbers at Chelsea in 42 games, I don't think anyone would be talking about him pulling up any trees. So this is why I think sometimes you have to be careful about throwing these players in too early. But at the same time, you know, if they're good enough, then why don't they get in? But the main thing he's got to consider is the fact that he's predominantly a right winger, and that's where Palmer's playing. And your chances of dislodging him are impossible. So I don't think he'd be quite polished enough to play as a number 10 in the Premier League.
Mm.
So, I just don't see how he gets enough game time to continue to develop without going out on loan first.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel the same, Berth?
Yeah, I do tend to agree, Chris, to be fair. I think you're not going to dislodge Palmer. I think even Madueke, I don't think he's going to be ahead of Madueke, to be honest with you. I think it all depends on the management as well. I think it all depends. He needs a real good chat with Pochettino at the end of the season, whether Pochettino's still in charge or not.
Oh, no, I was thinking
story. But if Pochettino, whoever's manager, he needs a good chat with them and their visions, because I think that sort of will tell you whether he's got a future at Chelsea next season or not. So yes, it is all about sort of who's playing where and therefore, but it also depends on the manager as well. I think that's what he's got to take into consideration.
Yeah, 100%. I echo both of what you've just said, really. I mean, we'll move from the club side to the countryside. I know what I meant. Anyway, his country, yeah, allegiance. He's got, obviously, England and Jamaica have both sort of asked for which team is he going to represent. For now, he's apparently put it on hold to focus on his club side, but there's going to be some factors to sway his decision. Obviously, you've got representing England. There's going to be opportunities for the success there, potentially, you know, World Cups, Euros, or he could be a standout star for the Jamaica national team. And there's certainly less pressure than naturally being an England team. I mean, we all know that straight away. But before we do discuss that point, I'll just point out that, yes, he has played for Jamaica, but FIFA eligibility rules do state a player can still switch allegiance if they have played no more than three competitive fixtures for the first team before turning 21. So as long as those matches, obviously, were not at a World Cup or a continental final. So as it stands, he can switch. Where do you think he might? I mean, this is a difficult one. I kind of feel that because he's actually currently with, I think he might be with the Jamaica team at the moment because he played earlier in the month. I think that might be where he goes.
Oh, you tend to agree. I think, again, it's all about competition, really. And when you look at our England at the minute is in such a good position when it comes to wingers, number 10s, it's ridiculous that you look at, you got Saka, you got Foden, you got Cole Palmer. I mean, he's not getting anywhere near those three, is he, really? And then you got Jared Bowen, you got players like that, you got Rashford still, you still got Sterling. And let's face it, he's just nowhere near that level yet. And it's a difficult one. But at the end of the day, you know, Jamaica, he's going to start for them every time. So it's a real, real difficult one. But yeah, I think it'll be Jamaica that he aligns with.
What do you think, Chris?
I'd represent Jamaica. I think I don't think he's got much of a chance of getting in the England team, to be honest, because, you know, we have got an embarrassment of riches in those areas now. And he would have to perform really well for a good number of years to get in that England team now, like, because all of those lads are really young as well, you know, Saka, Foden, Palmer, that not far off his own age. So it's not like he's thinking, well, I can just replace them, because you can't. And I think, you know, you look at someone like Wilfried Zaha, for example, he was performing really well at Premier League level year after year after year, and he couldn't get anywhere near the England team. So he had to go in the end and choose to represent another country. And I think Hutchinson will be the same. And I just think if you want to play international football, you'll play for Jamaica. When you most likely won't play for England.
I mean, to be fair, the Jamaica national team has a good amount of top talent. I mean, they've got the MLS keeper, Andre Blake, who's currently at the Philadelphia Union. He's one of the top keepers in the MLS. You've obviously got former Blue in Casey Palmer. You've got Mikel Antonio, Bobby Reed, Jamal Lowe, Demarai Gray. I mean, and Leon Bailey. I mean, it's a good team. It's not a bad team at all. I mean, for me, I mean, it's a tough decision, obviously. You know, on one hand, it's England, but, you know, that chance to develop alongside, obviously, the England team. But you're right, you know, it's the opportunity. And Jamaica provides a very unique opportunity to shine. And, I mean, it's not going to be a decision that should be rushed. But the best question is, what does your heart sort of tell you? I mean, when he hears the national anthem, wears that national team shirt, what would mean more to him and his, you know, his soul? I mean, whatever that answer is, that's the right answer to me. I do believe it'll be Jamaica, but where do you envision genuinely his future for the club level? Do you think he's going to sign that deal?
But again, I compare it to Hudson Odoi again. I just think that's the way it's going to go. I don't think he's ever going to... I could be wrong because I do like that. I think he's really, really good. But I just feel like he's one of them where we're just going to let him go for about 20, 30 million and he's going to do well somewhere else. I just feel that, like at Chelsea, he's just not going to get the opportunities that that he probably does deserve. You know, I'd like to see him at Chelsea and I'd like to see him do well, but I just feel that like it's just one of them that he just won't get that chance to prove himself at Chelsea, and it'll be eventually sold for a big profit.
Yeah. What do you think, Chris?
Well, the main question is, would he be considered pure profit?
Yeah, I think so, because he was on our books originally. I know I saw this on Twitter a few weeks ago, but he was on our books before he went to Arsenal as academy player. So he would count.
So his options are, don't sign the new contract and go and play somewhere else. Sign the new contract, go out on loan, break into the first team, have a really good season and then get sold. Those are your choices. Either way, he's not going to play for us, because this ownership are proving that if you are pure profit, it doesn't matter how you perform.
Yeah.
You'll be gone.
Yeah.
So I don't think, and through no fault of his own, you know, it might not play well, but most likely through no fault of his own, he won't have a future at Chelsea.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it sort of sucks that that's a thing and a consistent thread within Chelsea at the moment, but yeah, I kind of feel the same. I mean, I did write down that I feel he'll sign an extension, but it's hard to see. It's hard to see it. Yeah. Right. We'll move to our question segment. And Christmas questions. I'll start with something, though, that's quite important. And I'm glad it was actually brought up by Yunus Miata. And they sent to us this exact tweet. They went, not so much of a question, but more of a shout out. Can you just say a big well done to all the members of the Chelsea Supporters Trust who took part in the big Stamford Bridge sleep out at the weekend, raising money for the Stoll Foundation, which supports homeless and vulnerable veterans, and also the Barons Court Project, who provide help with mental health issues to homeless and vulnerable people in West London. Absolutely. Yes. I mean, outstanding causes. Both deserve huge love, support and shout outs from us and from you as well, listeners. They are incredible, incredible charities that you should check out. So yeah, simple as that. Incredible stuff from them.
Right. Yeah, 100%. 100%, yeah, yeah. By the way. Like, it's very important. Big love for them. Yeah, 100%.
It's very important. I think we all take those sort of things for granted in our day-to-day lives. You know, just like we've said, you know, when we say at the end of each episode, keep yourself well, you know, treat yourself well. We do. We, you know, good days, we kind of sometimes think, oh, yeah, there's other people who are obviously not so fortunate. And
100%.
Yeah. We,
and, you know, yeah, the thing is as well, like I have a huge respect for normal people who give up their spare time to do things for charity, because I think like celebrities get a lot of praise for it, but they do have a lot of money and a lot of time. So like, although as good as it is, I do think sometimes, like, you know, normal people who are doing it, it's more impressive for normal people who have got normal lives with their own stuff going on and going to work and all of that, to give up their like free time, family time, to go and do those things, I do think is incredible. I have a huge amount of respect for those people.
Yeah, 100%. Right, we will wrap up the Monday show with a surprise new segment. I'm unveiling it right here, right now. It's called, this is good. I had a dream about it and I wrote it down, remembered it. Ross Turnbull's Tenable. It's inspired by the game show Tenable. if you're not familiar with that game show, Tenable, the end of the game is to come up with as many answers as you can out of 10 in a given category. I'm doing a bit of a five-a-side version for this debut, though, because it's a bit of a pain in the arse list. So the debut category, and I haven't got the bloody list up yet, but anyway, I've got it now. What is the hardest thing to do in sports? So I've got a top five according to thesportsground.com, and this is all sports, any sport at all. It's a thing you do in the sport. No, so it's not like win the treble, win a trophy. It's not that. It's the thing itself. Maybe it is the sport. I don't know. But can you think of, what do you think of the hardest thing in sport?
Okay, so when you say hardest thing in sport, so like, are we saying like a hole in one?
That would be considered. Yeah, I mean, it's not on the top five, but.
Oh, right, okay.
It's not even in the top 10, which I feel.
And me and Berth are working together on this, are we?
Yeah, I'm not.
Okay.
That was just a test run, by the way. That was a test run.
That wasn't an answer.
No, that was an example. That was an example of, oh, is it that sort of thing? Is it that sort of thing?
I mean, I don't think I'd get. I mean, you all know what they are, but I just don't know. the top five, I think, is so number one. It's like, oh.
Right. Come on, Chris.
I'd say one is a American sport.
Can you give us the Olympics?
They're in the Olympics. The other four are for sure. I'm going to have to double check that one. Yeah.
Hardest things to do in sport. And hole in one, he said, isn't on there. And that's going to be, that is really hard. So, stupidly difficult.
Okay, yeah. Chris, what do you think? What do you think about a world record? That's quite hard to do.
Oh,
yeah, I was just thinking that, like, run 100 meters in under 10 seconds.
You know what? I'm going to allow you said running. It's one of the words. Number one, this is the hardest thing in sports, is apparently running a marathon.
Okay.
I mean, it's 26.2 miles. I mean, I don't know if I could do it. So,
okay, then if we're going on the marathon, what about a triathlon?
Yes. That was number five, completing an Ironman triathlon.
Well done. Okay. Well done, Beth. That's
2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike ride, and a 26.2 mile run.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
Bloody hell.
That is really hard. I don't agree with the marathon one. Like, to run a marathon in a certain amount of time is really hard, but just to run the marathon, thousands of people do that every year. How is that difficult?
I'll tell you what,
Chris, you know what Chris is doing this year.
if you can complete it in a costume, it's not that hard.
That's so unfair. I mean, to be fair, the number four I feel is harder than a marathon. That's in my opinion.
Right. What sport has it got to do with, or what? Give us a clue, because I feel like me and Chris have got...
it involves water.
Right.
Right.
swim the channel.
Swim the English channel.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Yeah.
Swim the English Channel. That's 20. Okay, right. That can be 20 hours. I feel that swimming would be harder than running.
That is harder than a marathon.
Yeah, because couldn't change your pace really in a marathon. Whilst swimming, you kind of have to keep something. You got to sort of float for a bit.
No, not unless the tide's going in.
You know. Yeah.
So that's three now we've got. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You've just got number two and number three. Number three. Is in the Winter Olympics, and number two is in something you do in an American sport.
Three is a Winter Olympics.
Winter
Olympics.
And I would love to see one of you lot do it.
Okay. Does it involve skates?
Yes, it does. Skates.
Skates.
I'd back myself to be quite a good ice skater.
Oh, I would love you to do this.
Yeah, I am quite.
It's something
figure skating. It can't be figure skating.
It is in figure skating.
Is it a certain move in figure skating?
It is. I'll give you that.
Yeah, as I say,
it is the triple axel, where you basically, apparently, according to this, you complete 3.5 rotations in the air and land on 1 foot.
I would not be able to do that.
Beth, no, you sure you confident now?
I'm not.
Right.
Has anyone seen the film Blades of Glory, by the way?
I've seen bits of it.
That reminds me of what you've just said, Mikey. But anyway, carry on. Right, number two.
Number two, American sport. So you got number five was completing an Ironman triathlon. Number four, swimming the English Channel. Number three, completing a triple axel in figure skating. Number one was running a marathon. Number two is something you do in an American sport.
I'll tell you what, right? I can think of all the American sports, and I don't think any of it could top a triathlon, a marathon.
It's. Ooh, I don't know.
Or anything.
This is a weird list, isn't it? Because.
I did think that when I read it.
Yeah.
Because most of these are like, except for the figure skating one, they're physically difficult to do. They're not a skill.
But, I don't know.
It said here the hardest thing to do in sports. That's what it said. That's what the category was. Hardest.
Because
thing
to be fair,
sports,
getting a basket from halfway is really difficult.
It's not NBA. It's not the NBA. Okay. It's not the NFL.
Yeah, say, if it was the NFL, I think Michael would have told us by now. It's baseball.
It's baseball. It's baseball.
No way is that the hardest. There's no way. If that's that, I am quitting this podcast right now on the spot.
Go on.
There's no way.
A home run?
No way.
I'll give you that. It's hitting a major league pitch. Just hitting the ball.
Bollocks. That's just hitting it. That's what it says here. It says just hitting the ball.
It's on the list.
That's bullshit, for me, I'd never hit it.
Nah,
but
you know
if
what?
I was a professional baseball player, I would.
I would say defending, being on the offense or the defensive line in the NFL is one of the most hard. I mean, you've seen them guys, if they run at you,
This is the most random list ever. I've got one for this list. Scoring a goal in a World Cup final, that's really difficult because if you don't play in one, you can never get it.
I'm sorry. Number three, that you can't hit a baseball pitch. Bullshit. How quick do they throw that ball? About 90 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour?
100 miles an hour.
Right, I've played cricket.
It's like a tennis serve.
Nah. I've played cricket for about 18 years. I guarantee, right, if you put a baseball bat in my hand, bear in mind, I've never played it, I reckon I can at least touch one of those baseballs that gets pitched at me. Guarantee it.
I will defend. I don't think I could do any of them. I'd give the Ironman triathlon a go and the marathon, I guess, but I don't think I could do it. I think that's...
How that's number two, right, is actually...
I want to hear what the listeners think. Do you feel you could hit a baseball pitch?
I'm sorry. Can we just appreciate that that's number two, but swimming the English Channel
I
is
know.
Number four.
I thought that as well when I read the list. I mean, next time we do this, it'll be a more easier list, but still, for a start.
I'll tell you why most of them was wrong, though. Because the marathon, the English Channel and the triathlon, you can't... Anyone within reason could train to do those things. It's not a skill.
Okay.
Whereas, like, I could play golf. Like, people play golf for 50 years and they never get a hole in one because it's a skill.
A hole in one is harder. That's harder than hitting a baseball pitch.
Okay. Yeah, I can sort of see where you're coming from now, actually. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
a skill is harder than something that's just physically hard.
Hey, controversial list, but we'll have a better list next week. I just thought it'd be a bit of fun.
I enjoyed that list.
That list was actually really good, though, because that is proper topic, that.
I enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Treat yourself well. We'll be back on Thursday. I paused there because I just saw a bit of breaking news saying Forest have appealed their 4-point deduction, but we all know that was going to happen. And this isn't a Nottingham Forest pod, so who cares? Anyway, till Thursday, that is going
to
be
You've
us
been
signing
listening
off.
To At The Bridge Pod, a Chelsea FC podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram by searching for At The Bridge Pod. And if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, leaving us a review is always appreciated.